Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. This is November 15th, 2000, and, I don't know, maybe try a nine or something. Our Sunday night show. We had fun on a Thursday night. I actually got hold of a video from the health minister of Finland that Steve Barish and I were able to play on Ustream, and we also played it on BBS Radio. And strangely enough, because it talked about the American pharmaceutical incorrectness, Donald Rumsfeld was mentioned, and a lot of other stuff was mentioned by the, you know, one step down from the Prime Minister of Finland, who's part of a big European group. It's totally down on what's going on with this fake flu stuff that's going on, plus a lot of other things. And so that link is now taken down. Our government took it down. So there you go. I sent a link out to a few people, and now it's not there anymore. That's what you expect when the truth goes out, because it was international. So anyhow, we're going to continue on with last week as promised, and then we'll put in another tape. The second tape that we play tonight will be a little scratchy, but it's got a lot of information on it. And it will start out when I was getting out of the Air Force because of the big cover-up of the UFOs. But right now, let's continue on with last week. And I'll have to set the levels here.
It's a peaceful thing. And each time as the poison decreased in the body, it pulled out other toxins with it, and the experience was a very high euphoric experience on the second day. The American Indians did the same thing, the same exercise as the Tibetans only did with a rattlesnake bite. The rattlesnake bite, the grave was put in a circle of rocks in a sacred burial ground or a sacred ground, and it had the blessings of the tribe. So this kept the air purified during this out-of-body experience so that some low influence didn't take the body, and the brave would let the snake bite him several times on the first day, and then he would be on a fast for 3 or 4 days, maybe 7 days. And there was no administration to the poison in the body. It was not removed. It was consumed and converted. So that means that a human being with colon problems, with worms, can absorb the poison, can utilize the poison, but it's not the best way to go, and it's not the desired experience. So the idea is to remove these things. The second thing that we find in colon therapy is the small intestine feeds the large intestine, and there's a valve called the ileocecal valve. Most people have a jammed or blocked ileocecal valve. I was a vegetarian for 7 years before I had my first colonic, and I had a blocked valve. So when we put the barium in through here, the barium not only showed the deficiencies in the large intestine, but it went up in the small intestine as well. So the oxygen water treatments with the gift to get rid of this condition will also open this valve and it'll cause it to work properly. Okay? And digestion is an important thing to understand. And basically, the way the digestive process works in the human being is this. The enzyme is a chemical product or a chemical property that we all have. We have different enzymes to break down different foods. And the enzyme goes in on a chemical reaction but is not consumed by that chemical reaction. So if we eat some food, and that's going to be broken down to form protein, certain enzymes are always required. Now, the body can only process so many enzymes at a time. That's why they'll tell you to mix carbohydrate and fruit, or fruit and protein, or carbohydrate and protein, but not to mix fruit and vegetables, things like that, certain combinations, because the body cannot manufacture all these enzymes and produce them and digest them and process them in the stomach. So you end up with some kind of alimentary canal problem because you combine the wrong foods. That's why we have these little food charts out now. And a good thing that I learned from Pablo Arroyo, which I've always done, is that when you eat salads, eat your salad last in a meal. Don't eat it first, because the salad distributes the hydrochloric acid all over the stomach. So the hydrochloric acid is needed along with the digestive enzyme pepsin to break down large fat molecules. So those of you that are eating meat and other heavier foods, if you eat the salad first, there's no hydrochloric acid left. So what happens is the meat is pushed on down through the alimentary canal and ends up impacting the colon and constipation as a result. So eat the salad last. That's why in Europe they always serve the salad last. So now when you eat food, you start chewing the food, the first thing you do is you start releasing enzymes. Okay? The enzymes are released in the saliva. They're stored in the salivary ducts inside the mouth. The food with the enzyme is brought down into the stomach. There, it combines and begins to form the amino acids. The amino acids are called peptides and polypeptides. The best reason not to eat meat was the formation of these amino acids, because if you look at the peptides in an animal and the peptides in a human being, the peptides are in an animal are different than a human being, and the human body cannot absorb the aminos properly. An example of that, well, let's draw a typical thing right here. Here, these would be like papain, pepsin, and that. These would be peptides forming polypeptides, and they're carbon atom chains in the body. Now, the first one would represent a chain, and when these things are lined up like this, you have a complete amino acid. If in the case of an animal, you need an animal product, the first three might line up, the second three might line up, and they're absorbed, and they become denser. So this is an amino acid that's already in the body. This is the one to be digested. And as they digest, they combine chemically, making the nucleus of each amino more dense or solid. But in the case of an animal, maybe the first six would combine, but the last three would not. So you get a cancellation reaction. So two-thirds of the animal product did something, and one-third didn't. The one-third that didn't, what it does is causes an allergic condition in the body. And immediately when anybody eats meat, if you measure your blood pressure and your heartbeat, the blood pressure always goes up 20 to 30% with any person ever eating meat. Now, when the blood pressure and the heartbeat goes up 20 to 30% on the eating of meat, immediately causes the heart to go up in this rate. And it causes more heartbeats. The heart has X number of billions of beats in a lifetime. And if you're constantly eating meat, you're shortening the lifespan of the heart. The next condition that happens is in the arteries in the skin, the epithelial cells. And what happens there is if you look at the skin, here's the surface of the skin, I'll draw it here, right here, coming up like this. And epithelial cells in the arteries, the way the blood supply comes up, it makes a sharp bend at the surface of the skin and comes back down again. Well, what happens is when you're eating meat, the allergenic response causes an erosion at the top part of this blood vessel where it comes out to the surface of the skin. Just like if you had like the Mississippi River, when certain rains come, it starts eroding out certain banks on the outside. This happens every time you eat meat. When this happens, the body has to repair that damage, and that's what cholesterol is for. So the body immediately, when this toxic condition comes on, starts secreting cholesterol. So that therefore, every time you eat meat, it causes a erosion of the arteries, an increase in heartbeat, an increase in blood pressure, and then a secretion of cholesterol. That's why a lot of people on high cholesterol and low cholesterol diets can't get the same results, because some of them on a high cholesterol are meat eaters and some of them aren't. Okay? That's the reason why, because of that toxic reaction. Whereas a vegetable protein, like a tomato, for example, won't cause this reaction in the body. Now, I'm not saying those of you that are eating meat don't do like I did. When I learned all these medical facts about meat eating, I immediately stopped eating meat, instantly. Just right there, triple Leo, right? No more meat eating. And what I did 2 years later is I went into protein deprivation. And what protein deprivation went manifested on me, I came one day, I was looking, I had a normal arm, and all of a sudden this area in my arm turned bright red and swelled up a half an inch. And every portion of my body, this area of my chest, swelled up, became bright red, swelled up a half an inch. Areas on my legs, here, here, and here. My face, my cheeks swelled up, and my neck. So I was like a patchwork quilt. That condition lasted for 4 hours, and then it completely went neutral again, and the area that was swollen red went neutral, and the area that wasn't swollen swelled up. And I did that for 2 weeks. And then finally I found out that I had protein deprivation, and one of my teachers at the School of Actualism in San Diego, I went down there to him and asked him what's happening to me. I'm flashing hot, flashing cold. I couldn't feel any mental changes, but I knew something was wrong with my body. It's protein deprivation. He sat me down and says, "You're going to have a steak." And I said, "Wait a minute. I can't digest meat. I haven't had a piece of meat in 2 years. He says, "Bet me." And he started frying the steak on the stove, and that smelled good. And I sat down and I ate that whole steak, and I felt so good afterward. And my body immediately was recovered from that. It didn't really have shock anymore. So if you go off meat, don't go off it, you know, immediately. Go off it over a period of 7 years. It takes 7 years for the body to regenerate a complete set of organs. And all of the endocrine glands have different hormones in them and different enzymes in them that have trained us to digest and assimilate the food as we know it in our habitual patterns. So when you make a transition, make one transition 7 years. If you're going off meat, Eat it 7 days a week, cut it down for the first year to say 5 days a week. And alternate your fish and your meat and your chicken, like that. You have a question?
Is there a difference between vegetarian protein and animal protein?
Yeah, there is. There is. It's in the chemical structure. It's in the, and it breaks down into polypeptides, like I was telling you about. There is a difference, right? Animal protein is very close to human protein. Now, eggs, things like that, are closer. Eggs are good for you. The rule that I always learned from my teachers, and I found that it works, if it falls off a tree, what's it going to do? It's going to rot. You know, it's common sense. A chicken lays an egg. Somebody doesn't eat the egg, it rolls off on the floor and breaks. So I'm not saying in vegetarianism, abstain from protein totally. No, I eat eggs, I eat butter. These are natural byproducts of the animal. I just don't eat the animal itself. Chicken is not good for you, not because the chicken is not so good, it's because what the chickens are fed and raised. When I lived in Arkansas, we raised chickens. We raised a chicken in 19 weeks. We fed it full of chemicals and it just swelled out. It was a protein swelling. And most of the chickens that we raised had cancer or pneumonia when we would pick them up. They'd have growths on them, tumors, or they would be breeding so bad, tremendous amounts of pneumonia. Because the chickens were growing so fast, and there was very little attention taken to their actual health. All they wanted to do was make them grow fast. And they were just a big mucus bag, so they weren't that good. So you're better off on fish. Fish is your best bet. And red meat better than chicken. Although in the old days, you've been better off eating chicken versus red meat. The idea is to rotate the meat when you're eating them. Now, the next thing is, when you digest, you chew the food up, mix with the enzyme, it goes down into the upper part of the stomach and the small intestine. Here, it's broken down from protein to carbohydrates. Now, the carbohydrate is like an explosive or volatile mixture in the small intestine when it gets down here, just above the ileocecal valve. The last part of digestion, when it's turned into carbohydrate in the lower part of the small intestine, this is what's called the last part of the Krebs cycle. And during the last part of the Krebs cycle, the liver secretes bile and the pancreas secretes insulin. So in the presence of carbohydrate, insulin, and bile comes oxygen through the airstream, through the lungs. And as soon as oxygen hits this mixture, it ignites in the body, producing body heat, and electricity, magnetism, and all the things that give us that warm feeling that takes place in this area down here. So that's your last stage of digestion. Then, the fiber material that has not exploded is then moved out through the ileocecal valve after the heat process and out in the large intestine where the minerals are now extracted. The vitamins are taken out here and the minerals come out through here. And this chart, if you could read it clearly, shows you which each one of these folds breaks down a particular mineral. The science is down to Dr. Z right now. And this iridology is very good at this point because when you look at iridology, each one of these folds has an optic fiber going out to the eyes. So an iridologist can see by each part in the eyes, as you look at the eyes all the way around the outside of the iris, you can see the actual shape of the colon. The same thing is these fibers also go to the fingertips, so when we use Krillian photography, we can see the electrical shape. He's looking at an optical shape, I'm looking at an electrical shape. So this is why the Krillian photography is so beneficial in diagnosing the colon. And we're able, through Krillian photography and then using the barium x-ray, we can actually determine that. If we put a small amount of barium in the water inside the body, and an x-ray, it shows up as an actual glow like that. So now we can diagnose the comparison between the x-ray, the iridology, and the Krillian photography. That's how we got the Krillian photography evolved to where it is today, by these comparisons. Because in the holistic movement, everybody's working as brothers, and we're communicating and sharing our knowledge all the time. So it gives us total knowledge of each other's respective field. So it gives us a wider degree of presentation.
That finished up what we promised we would finish up. So now what we'll do is we'll go into this other tape. And this starts out where I was explaining how the military cover-up was so great that I had to get out. I couldn't stay in the Air Force any longer at this point in time, although I had a blast when I was there. Quality's not quite as good, but it works. And we'll tune it up as best we can here. It starts right out about now. Where's Dr. Fred? Hey, Doctor, where you at, dude? Come on here, the volume a little lower. Yeah, get all the volume set. Talking about getting out of the Air Force.
and I stormed out of this red light and white for the first night shift. I stormed out of this office, senior tech sergeant office, who was the group leader at night. Okay? I stormed out of his office, mad as hell. I said, I'm getting out. I totally had it. I already moved off the base because I couldn't stand to live on the base anymore because there was all this, you know, these guys, you know, we're 150, 200 people, scientists, military working together, civilians. We're up here at the site, and, they're having, they're swapping wives. We have this NCO club. They're having brawls, and I mean, the morality was terrible.
This is an old tape, so if it doesn't record. We'll start something else, but this was a good, it's a good, interesting
getting
tape.
Getting up tonight, you're laying me out. No, you're not. You got your grandma holiday. I heard the $1 million rap about how much money they spent on me. They were mad because they were on my motorcycle. They had a highly controlled spending, long chasing me all the time, giving me tickets for doing nothing, you know. I was pissed. So I says, I'm getting out. So I went outside and I says, how am I going to, I'm going to get myself on something, you know, I'm going to follow it through. I was so damn mad. So I went out and I said, these guys, this military is based on fear. The whole military is based on fear, and basically they're afraid to die. Okay, that's what I figured. So I'm going to play that one out. So I went and I'm going to make them responsible for me dying. That's what I'm going to play up. So I went and got me we had these little 2 gallon orange cans to push it down and it opens up and has carbon tetrachloride in it to use to clean high voltage parts on radar. I said, this is very toxic. It's like the glue over there. Didn't bother me, I worked on that stuff all the time, you know. So I went out and went and got a can of that and 2 big red rags, like the shop rags the mechanics have. And I poured this carbon tetrachloride on this rag. And I did that as I walked in on this sergeant's office. I got up on his desk. I physically stood up on his desk, poured this stuff all over these rags, bent over and says, I'm getting out right, not only am I getting out tonight, I'm getting out right now and you're going to watch me leave. That's exactly what I told him. I bent myself like this, poured all the stuff out, and started breathing, fire breathing into the carbon tetrachloride, like I was going to kill myself. The guy freaked out. He went nuclear. Okay? He pushed me off the desk, pulled the stuff away from me, pushed the button, had base security, two air policemen came in, arrested me right on the spot, trying to commit suicide. And 15 minutes later, I was in a van on my way down to Hamilton Air Force Base. For trying to kill myself. I was having a blast. They're believing that shit, you know? I was out of there. I did it in 15 minutes. I was out. They didn't even waste time with me. They had me out of there. They got me down to Hamilton Air Force Base. They locked me up to Letterman Air Force Base. Hamilton's the base down at Santa Rosa and Point Arenas north. So they took me over to Letterman Air Force, Letterman Army General Hospital, which has a big, insane asylum unit there. They put me in this giant room about this size with great big heavy doors with all these crazy people, supposedly, and they stuck me there for the night. And they had some guy watching in there so I wouldn't try to put nothing in there to kill myself, right? Next morning, they come in, and the orderly comes in, wakes me up, you know, as he gets dressed, just that the doctor wants to see it, you know? So I go out the door in this great big giant walls that thick, like my recording studio room, with this doctor sitting there. I sit down and he starts to tell me, he says, what were you doing last night? What was wrong with you? I says, nothing was wrong with me. I says, well, didn't you try to kill yourself? I says, of course I didn't try to kill myself. He says, well, it appeared that way. I said, it was meant to. You know, I was very pissed still, you know. I said, it was meant to. And he says, well, what was going on? And I told him the story. I said, you know, I had this $1 million education. He already knew that because he had my file in front of him, you know. He didn't run that one off on me, that $1 million education. He kept that quiet. He was the only one that ever did. And he runs all this shit off. He says, my God, you've been 2.5 years. You have an outstanding record. You know, you've got your rank is as high as you can get. You're one of the youngest people in the Air Force with this rank and all this bullshit. And I says, yeah. And I says, you got all these flying saucers coming. I'm filling out these forms and I can't tell the American public. I think it's bullshit. I don't believe in the Air Force anymore. And I told him my whole death story, my intimidation, the whole thing. And you know what he did? I swear to God, he did. The guy got up from his desk, reached over and shook my hand. And said, you know what? I believe you. And he says, I would have done the same thing 20 years ago. But he says, I got stuck in here and now I got to stay in for retirement. I respect you. What do you want to do? I said, I want out. You know? He says, fine. He says, we're going to make a compromise. We have to serve you for 2 weeks. I said, fine. So they let me out instantly. I was out. They put me over in an open barracks, and I went to work for the Army. They made a biologist out of me. And so for 2 weeks, I worked in an Army laboratory, Letterman, you know, hospital, or Letterman, whatever it is down there, base, you know, for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks went by, they pulled me in, not the doctor, but the military did, and they said, we're going to offer you a commissioned job in the Army as a second lieutenant in the biology division because you're so outstanding and brilliant. I said, I really respect that, but I want out. They said, are you sure you want out? I said, I want out. I don't want to be a second lieutenant in a biology lab in the Army. I want out. The next day, I went to the Air Force Base. I drove up there on my motorcycle, sat down there. Now I got the rap. I got $1 million. You know, we spent $1 million on the base colonel. We spent $1 million on you. And it isn't really fair if we're letting you out. And they created legislation. It's called the early out. They let me out with fully honorable discharge and you know, unadaptable legislation. That's how I got out of the Air Force. So, I mean, when I get pissed off at something, I'll go to any extreme to get my point across.
What are you saying, though?
You write something? Yeah, everybody. Talk about, remember when we put the pyramid in our little place in the hammer thing? You didn't like that part, did you? You didn't want it in there, did you?
Yeah.
Did you want it in there or not?
Well, I don't know.
What happened after you slept in?
Well, when he was breaking it down, because we were short, the pyramid had to take it through, you know, to a man's show in Germany. So when he was breaking it down, the energy of the left, it was so, it was amazing. Like, well, energy of the left. And so that's what I.
Yeah. Then you were eventually said the room was too small and that upset the furniture, right?
Yeah, it was just
so small. So, did I answer your question? This is better one here. Yeah. Oh yeah, then it would change. If you get the attention of the majority of the people holding up that thought form, then it would change. You have to capture the majority. Remember I was talking yesterday about the Earth's is resistance? You know, we have the Earth's aura field made by the summation of humanity, right? And unfortunately, the summation of the aura field of the Earth is a negative direction. The dry lands are still ruling. You know, we're still getting screwed. We still got vitamin A and D synthesized into our milk, you know, fake stuff. Real vitamin A and D were in the milk, that would be okay, but it's not real. It's a synthetic vitamin. It's dangerous. And that kind of stuff. So that still rules. What? Yeah, we got to change that aura field around. So what we're doing is, through these seminars, the Andromeda is what they've interfered, you know, they've intervened already, and we're taking and setting these systems up, and these systems amplify your thoughts like 10 million times. Like if you want a new car, you have a system, boom, you have a new car, like that. Okay? And so, the systems with all these vortexes, we're connecting the world grid vortexes. We're also connecting all of England up right now. As we speak, friends of mine are building a holistic center over there in Glastonbury. And my stuff's already in the area. And we're connecting all the, we've already connected all the ley lines up in Germany. That's just fine in all those places. I've already been to these places. We've got these systems up. I haven't really, we're just, you know, we're going to run a little over in time. There's so much of system. Just along yesterday on the components, you know. But we got this world grid system, and people are a part of it now. And that's why my Voyager band, that we're sending the music out on the airwaves next, you know. But the system is already embedded. And that was one other point that I spaced out on, and then we'll stop here, is the guy I was training at the Harley with. And I was talking about the 408 megahertz. Well, anyway, he started into this time travel work with his system after he had about 6 or 8 months. And he said that he wanted to get a 408 megahertz generator and stick it in his system
to amplify the Montauk and Philadelphia experiment effect in his personal system. But I told him to go out to a surplus store and tell him what to get, and you can buy a surplus to amplify it. We started into his quest in the surplus store, but then he made some kind of other discovery. Evidently, he programmed his system for an answer, and he got an answer. I called him back 2 weeks later. I said, we'll get that 480 megahertz generator to make your system go into this time travel so you can go interdimensional with it. And he says, no, I don't need it now. I've found another way to do it. And I was hoping to show up at a seminar because that was kind of some of the stuff I wanted to share with some of you that have some people already. Some of the stuff that's going on what I call the avant-garde on the front edge. Yeah.
Okay. We can take a break now. 3:15 now.
Whoever wants the jowl, I have it sitting over here, so you might as well get it from me now.
I epitomized what I was going to do about it. Yeah, less valuable. Yeah, much less valuable. Okay, it's the university kernel. And so, was it always a kernel? Of course, there's no beginning or free. We're going to do a meditation in a little bit to answer that question because you're going to experience it. But universal. The universe is not eternal. It's breathing. And the universe is collapsing and reconstituting itself at a very high rate of speed. The universe, nothing here is solid. It all appears. Something loose. And the universe is 1 minute we're all here, 1 minute we're all not here. 1 minute we're here, 1 minute we're all not here. We have an illusion based on our emotional body that makes it appear that it's all solid. And when you conquer, when you begin to realize that the universe is nothing more than a breathing sensation. Okay? And that's what these breaths and martial arts are all about, certainly yoga. What you do is you get in touch with the creator through its breath, through the motion of it. And when the yogis go into these meditations, they're called siddhis, they learn to get in touch with the source, the creation. Now, Christ was real good at it. And I've taken some of the training, because I thought it was the best method for half of my life. And what happens is, when you're able to go into the breath of the universe, the first thing you learn is how to become visible. Because cause your atoms to vibrate out of synchronicity away from the synchronicity of everybody else's atoms. And this control comes through mastery of the pineal gland, the third eye. And so what happens is, when you are able to get that control, you become invisible to us.
I think some of you first basically tell me, heard you say right on the tape, you know, January 15th, as I reported it, the war started in Iraq. And I also, if you go further back in the tape series, before the war started, I said the war is going to happen, and I described why it was
going to happen. They set the system up. Big system up. Big master grip. The whole staff started using it. Then he called, I networked into my friend Ralph over in Germany, who's my distributor over there, my main guy for all of Europe. And this guy had given me this Harley, which was his pride and joy. I mean, not everybody can go out and buy another Harley. But he really wanted the system. So he was making a sacrifice for it. And so he set the system up, and he started working with it. He called me up and had different questions. He didn't tell me exactly what he was going to do with it, you know. But pretty soon I know he's making a lot of long-distance calls to Europe, talks to Ralph, because he's networked with Ralph. And so it's been a year now. He was going to come to the seminar, but he's working the system up there. This guy has made a tremendous financial success out of his life and a tremendous career success out of his life and some other successes. And he don't even talk about it because one of the things you get into, and I said, if you ever want that rally back, you know, bring the system back, it doesn't work. I gave him like 6 months
change his mind. Rather want to take something from somebody of that value and give him a system that's tremendous value, off of him, I'll be happy, because I'm not that kind of person. I don't force people to buy things and get stuck with things. I'm not greedy. And 6 months later, he says, man, he came down, he bought more stuff, he had the Firestar. He says, I'm making plenty of money now, I'm making, you know, he just added more lasers, and he got into some of these Montauk experiments and time travel, and he went way out with it, you know. So this is the kind of thing that happened. So he got into the network, now he's networking with some other people up in California. Another girl bought a system, set it up there in some valley up in the Valley of the Moon. He went down. She came down and helped him with his system because he'd been in Hawaii working with one over there. And then he went up and helped her. And I mean, they get tremendous results from working systems, you know. So anyway, what I want to say is grounding is very important when you start getting all this high power stuff going. And this is what I was going to lead you up to. In my house, you know, when you throw your circuit breakers in your house, you got to find out where your wiring is in your house. Because you want to throw your circuit breakers, but the ELF is so bad. Okay. Well, let me backtrack and finish the story up. At least a little bit more here. I'm getting off on too many things. That's okay. So anyhow, we were up at Dolphin, New Mexico. The same networking guy I was just telling you about, Fraser Harley, were also networked with Ann Rainbow. She was one of my Firestar networks. So we got up to Dolphin, New Mexico, or Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Ann Rainbow and her husband Ken joined us in the truck. We drove 3 more hours up to Dolphin, which is 3 hours north of Santa Fe, way up in the Four Corners. So Yossi had told me to bring this device, and she says, I want you to have an encounter with your grade, you know, to see what it's like, because you're going to be working with them more and more, you know, in the future. And I said, fine, we were having a telepathic communication. So we got up on the Apache reservation up there. And that's when I was talking to you about last night. Remember, John, about your friend who's a famous painter? Because the people that run that reservation, it's a huge reservation, have a giant gray base underneath it. They've paid their money. The Apache Indians paid their money to paint the old man. The great famous painter that painted like Custer and all the Cochise and all these Indian paintings back in the turn of the century, and he made a lot of money. That's how they got their reservation. They didn't actually get it from the government free. They had to buy some of it, you know. See, the government is weird with these Indians. So the Indians let me go out on the reservation. And so, first thing is, we're going up this river. I forget the name of the river, I'll remember it in a minute. We're up in this river, and Sinyasi says, stop the truck. I said, okay, I'll stop the truck. You know, I told everybody, Sinyasi told me to stop the truck. Cross the bell, you know, she hadn't had a close encounter before. She'd had that kind of encounter over there in Germany, but she never had one in her face, you know. And everybody said, yeah, we'll stop the truck. Now, Ann Rainbow had tremendous luck with the system, with her Firestar and stuff, but she had never been out, you know, as a witness where I'm with the Pleiadians. They're not far away. They're telling me to stop the truck and hang on. So we stopped the truck, turned the motor off, and exactly 11 minutes, a gray came up in a ship. It flew right at the truck. I mean, right at it. Came within a few hundred feet of it. And this device in the back started glowing. The thing I had in the back. It shot an energy into the gray. The gray, you know, I got this tremendous psychic flash from this ship, this flying saucer, flying right at my truck, right up the riverbed, right at me. You know, small, about an 18-foot or 19-foot ship. It was weird, funny color, with grays in it. Basically attacking it. Until this energy came on, it was like, this energy field came up. And then the gray, it came up like this, and went like that, and went that, and went back. It's about a bow to hell. And Ann Rainbow says, my God, you know, you weren't kidding around here, you know. Crocodile is saying, wow, you know, because I told him the ship was coming, but we were sitting right there to keep the motor off, you know. And it came right in our face. There were three witnesses, Ann, her husband, and Crocodile. So then Sinyasi says, get out of there. He says, get moving, okay? So, they just made a path at us, but they wanted, she said, now that they knew we were there, they were going to track us. For the next phase of this operation, we had to be prepared, and we had to get out of there before the gray started tracking. So we went roaring down the middle of nowhere, down the riverbed, way off towards Colorado, about 25 miles away. We went up on a hill up over the Archuleta Mesa. And so here all of us are sitting here. Anyone else? Okay. All right. Well, anyway, we get up on this hill. We're on this hill like this. And down here is the Arch of Illumination. The Arch of Illumination is about 5,000 feet high, and we're up about 8,000 feet on this hill. And it's about 5 or 6 miles across here, but it serves the Delta, because you can see all the way into Colorado, way down in New Mexico.
Okay.
So I got everybody up there. I got my truck parked in the plateau up there. I set up my synthesizers and all my equipment and get ready to blast energy, because inside there's a... how many of you have heard of Paul Benowitz? If you read some of his Paul Benowitz papers, I have them at the house, but he has a huge drawing of this, where the government installation is going into this, these secrets. There's like roads in the middle of nowhere up here. And this other girl, Charlotte Tilton, was abducted and taken into the grave base, and she was hypnotized. And later on, she remembered where it was, and the Japanese came over and got a helicopter, and they flew her in there, and they videotaped it. We weren't able to put that in my video, but we wanted to, but we couldn't get permission from the Japanese to put that segment in. I do have it at home in the footage. So anyway, this door, which is disguised as the size of a mountain, is where these flying saucers come out of. So we were up here with a tremendous sound, and we started shooting the sound. The first thing I did was I fired off a burst of sound energy down on the grave, which is 8 miles down there. First blast, what happened was every coyote in the whole hillside, coyotes went off everywhere. I mean, we got coyotes for 100 miles howling. They only went off once. Then I blasted the sound down there again, and this time the door slid back a little bit, and these ships started coming out. You ever seen a flying saucer come out of the ground and go straight up? We did that night, a bunch of them. They came out and went straight up into space. They were coming out of the ground straight up. And one came up over here, one came up over there. There were some other entrances that they were coming out of. And this happened like 5 or 10 ships took off. Because instantly, Nazi says, pack it up and get out of there now, because you're going to have a real experience now. And she never said anymore, and she left. And then we went back down to California, took a couple of days to get back, dropped off Man Rainbow. They had a hell of a night, And I've done this with other people, that I met in my seminars, my network. When I'm called out on the field to do something, that's why I have credibility, because I've actually done this, and I've had witnesses all over the world. There's books been written. There's 5 or 6 books have been written about me in Japanese. I can't even read about some of these things. And so we got back down to Laguna, and everything was pretty calm for a couple of weeks. And then what happened is my wife started going crazy. She just started going crazy. And I should have had them. She would have verified this, because she was one of the witnesses. What happened is the Grays retaliated. They came into my house in Laguna, and they dropped 13 people in town who came across the limb. One of them had seen the ship hovering over my house in broad daylight and dropped a silver cap on it, like silver tinfoil, all over the house. And I didn't know what it was. And so my wife started going crazy. Just went out of it. She just couldn't think. She couldn't focus anymore. And she had to go see a psychologist. We tried to help her. But just about that time, the Whitley Strieber movie came out, Communion. And when she comes down here later with the food, you ask her about that. She'll tell you, she'll verify the story. The Communion came out, and she saw how Whitley Strieber's wife was also going crazy in the movie, and how it affected her when the Grays attacked him, And eventually, he made friends with him, and he said, it's okay for you to stick your shit up your ass and have these implants and everything. They're just being friendly, and this is a little bit of a painful getting to know you, but afterwards, the spiritual experience is wonderful. And he scams people. You got to realize Whitley Strieber made his money by making vampire movies and stuff, and write vampire books. Oh, yeah, he wrote some of the heaviest vampire stories ever. So he was a pretty, he was world famous already as a writer, so the Grays used him as a pawn to make sure, it's okay, Grays are cool. And so that's how Community came across. Then Draka saw the movie, and I told her that Sannyasi and the Pleiadians, that she was married to me, we were going to go through some heavy shit, because in the future this would mean something. It was a civilization. And we had to have the experience. We couldn't just talk about it. We had to experience it. And so then she understood, and now she's calmed down. Like, almost overnight, she didn't have to see a psychologist anymore. And she was getting violent. She was so violent. She was just going off. Just going angry. Just throwing stuff. And she went and she attacked me. And she just went crazy. And this is what happens sometimes when you get attacked by Gray. So that's why Lynn last night said, we had to put the other star up there, the seven star up there, because this house comes under frequent attack. She wasn't kidding. Physical attack. So what we have to do, and I'm telling you this,
when you start raising your energy. And anybody that comes to my seminars is a fair game for the grade. Not because you came to the seminar. You probably already were fair game. Now you're being armed against them because these are the kind of people they attack to try to screw up so they can create more legislation out there. For example, the Stephen Whitman shooting down in Amarillo, Texas, back in 1984 or 3. Remember that? Huh? You know, yeah, cool. Killed 14 people. He wrote a diary on it. Was televised nationally. Great. When they did an autopsy on his body, he had 2 implants in the base of his brain. And they couldn't retrieve 4 metals metallic objects. It was on TV. They even announced it on nationwide ABC television. Okay? And he wrote in his diary, I'm going crazy. I'm going to kill my wife. I'm a normal person. I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm being driven to do this. And then what they do with Stephen Whitney legislation? They passed gun laws because the Trilads were behind it. They used the graves, they used him, he was set up. The same thing in Northern California. And then he legislated, they couldn't pass more gun laws. Okay? The H.R. 5910 went through in the House of Representatives on the weekend, establishing FEMA. They had FEMA exercises in Los Angeles last summer, up in Hollywood. Black helicopters, and they announced it on the news. Remember that? They said, don't be worried, this is a FEMA exercise. Because they want to come in and take you from your homes. If they declare martial law, and then they set up, they didn't use Saddam Hussein. That was the next step that they did. Saddam Hussein had no nuclear anything, but they tried to make everybody believe that he had all this nuclear stuff, right? And he had these nuclear things, and they kept having them, and he had nothing nuclear over there. He had the facility to make some nuclear stuff happen, to make some thorium, some U-235, but he didn't have any of it made. But Bush was sure saying he had it, and they sure came down on him, and he had all his inspectors over there, and they wanted. They knew Hussein didn't have anything. They were hassling with the United Nations inspectors, and they wanted him to react so they could retaliate again. Because then remember they told you, they said, don't get on the airplane, because the terrorists are out there. But that's not how terrorists work. Terrorists don't work that way. They work in an entirely different way. So they made the public believe that the terrorists were going to go out and bomb these planes. This is to establish this martial law thing. You know? That was a real terrorist thing. That was a real terrorist thing. But that was a nuclear warhead in there. That was a small nuclear bomb that went off. They tried to say it was carbon. In the new Federalist, it said that was a briefcase bomb. But they did that fooling. They didn't think the terrorists were that smart. Okay? So that was a up-in-their-face kind of thing with the Trilads, because they blew up the Trade Center. That's something the Trilads weren't prepared for. And they didn't activate FEMA because it was, you know, a FEMA exercise, because they didn't know about it. They were hit with their pants down, okay, on that one. But the Federal Emergency Management Act group, FEMA, is not here for terrorists. They're here to take people out that are going to hassle them on some level, like this guy they got in jail right now, LaRouche. Guy in jail right now. He's done nothing wrong. He beat the system out, you know. And the guy, this other guy that scammed all his money from the savings and loans, is out doing 2,000 hours of community service. He's still got all his billions of money because he's a Trilad. I mean, you got to realize how corrupt this system is and how deadly it is and how it works. You know, when they were spraying the people up there in L.A. with the Palestine, those were black helicopters. They were owned by a group called Evergreen, and they're part of Ad Hoc, and Ad Hoc is part of the FEMA group. Okay, like I was saying, Bush had graves at Camp David. My Japanese friend saw them. A friend, Margaret, the one that half skirt, her husband before he died had graves at their house up in New Mexico where they lived on their estate. I'm telling you, this is a deadly game that's going on right now. So, getting back. What am I leading up to? In question to him. Why that Firestar had to be, or that Devastar had to be hooked up the way it is. This is how important it is when you start getting into this work to realize the negative side of it. There's a great positive side of it, and there's a great negative side of it. And you're already probably swallowed up the negative already, and you don't even know it yet. So you might as well get the positive benefit of it and protect yourself on the negative side. First thing you do is you take your house. And you isolate with your circuit breakers where all your lines are. For example, plug a lamp into this side right here, and you open up the circuit breaker, and plug a lamp in over there, and it's on that side, and this circuit breaker right here, and I trip the light off, the light stays on. So you got another circuit breaker over there that trips that side, okay? So that means this ground and that ground are separate grounds.
So you got to find out in your house where your grounds are first. Because if you just stick this in for one ground and think your whole house is going to be done, it doesn't work that way. It used to be okay. Now it's not. Okay? It's not good enough anymore.
What do you have to do?
You got to find all your grounds. Okay? Then what you do, like in my house, I got over here on this side where the kitchen was last night. We just say here's the kitchen, the upper part of the house. This is the kitchen over here where the refrigerator was sitting. And over here is where the birds were in the dining room. It used to be the dining room, not the bird room. So what happens is I had to hook up, I hooked the big Dove Star up. I ran a wire down into the plug in the dining room. Then I ran another wire up across the ceiling and down into the plug on this side. And then I got the whole house on the upper level. And that's on the upper level, the main area that I was concerned with. Then I took a second ground wire and ran it out the window, went out down the side of the house and stuck it in the ground in an actual stake that was driven in the ground. So you ground out your plugs on both sides of your house with the thing, and then you put a third wire down into the ground. Okay? That's how you ground it out. And that gets rid of the ELF, boards it out. Any questions on how to do that?
In other words, if you're just sleeping inside of your pyramid, that will keep out the ELF.
It keeps the ELF out of the pyramid.
Right.
Doesn't keep it out of the house.
No.
Okay. What you have to do then, you have to put this into a pipe. You have to find a pipe under the sink. You have to be ground. You got to hook your unit up to ground, still. You hook it to a pipe, a water pipe. A lot of times, you look out your window, if you're close to a gutter pipe, the gutter pipe usually goes all the way down to the ground ceiling. So we're talking about hook it up to a gutter wire.
So that's the middle screen there that's going to do it?
Yeah, it's the middle hole. That's the one you want. And you'll find out that once you hook the system up like this, how much calmer you are. You'll be a lot calmer.
One of those flowers, devices from digital clocks and stuff like that, and going into your car.
Not sexual, actually, to be honest with you, but it's more of a kind of a mother-sister vibe kind of to me. So that was the kind of feeling that came to my body. Because my body, even though my body senses that aura, you know, the aura, whereas my ego doesn't, my body does. So I think that's what determines when you have these kind of contacts.
Is a bit of a noisy tape. That was an old tape, and some of the other one side fed through the other, and it had a lot of good information on it. I'll play a little bit of the other side, and it won't be much better, but then next week we'll have better quality again. I apologize for that, but I thought it was kind of interesting. Because we got a little bit of time left,
sure.
Not much.
But with Andromeda, the ships have been within sight, as I'm about to describe. So Liara said, we're here now, and we're going to be with you all the time from now on. Whereas Blaze will come and go, you know, and we'll be protecting you. I said, what does that mean? You know, I wasn't very friendly to her. I said, no. In the very first encounter with Sanyasia, she wasn't very friendly with me. Now, I wasn't being friendly with him. I said, well, I suppose you like the Pleiades. I said, Long Island, New York. And I have some at the house for sale if anybody wants to get one or two to sell you. Tells about time travel experiments, and a friend of mine was involved in that. It was written about in the book. At the time, I was at the University of Michigan. I was 9 years old, and I was working under Dr. Tapp in the University of Michigan West Engineering Randolph Laboratory. It was undergrad. I worked with cyclotron, I worked with synchrotron, and I was working on an experiment later known as the Philadelphia experiment. You might have heard of it. I worked on it when I was nine. This is when I obtained my first security clearance. And so when I was working on that, we were doing a lot of high voltage radio frequency experiments in the 408 megacycle band, 408 megahertz. Okay? Strangely enough, I didn't know when the Air Force had funneled me right along. The same thing happens when you read about. What's his name? The defected from Area 51, Bob Lazar. You read about him in Timothy Good's book. he had the same experience I did at about the same age, but I think I was a little younger when I got involved in the clearance and being physical and all that as a kid. So I was working on the Philadelphia experiment. He was working on the alien technology at Area 51. So we got a parallel that could relate to what his trip was all about. At the same time, unknown to me, 773rd radar over at Montauk was also working with us. And we were doing some funny things with these radars late at night that I couldn't exactly explain what we were doing. And I got into a bit of trouble trying to find out. Matter of fact, I got in so much trouble, I thought we'd leave the airport rather quickly. And I don't talk about that in my book, that's a true story. First of all, when we were working with this stuff, every night we were watching as many as 10 or 15,000 spaceships come down from outer space, descending over Point of Reading, which is the furthest point north of the California border. And we had to fill out a DDS Form 332, some of these forms we brought to the public and printed in some books. Right, once this DDS Form 332 was filled out, describing this alien interpenetration to our sky, it was immediately shredded the next morning. One guy looked at it, an officer came in at night, looked at it, and then shredded it. Meanwhile, I started getting involved with some of the electronics inside of this radar and getting evidently, learning too much about it I shouldn't know about. And one night they tried to accuse me of almost electrocuting some guy. Because they brought a system up and some guy was inside this cabinet with high voltage, and if he had stepped off the high voltage, he'd been electrocuted. It wasn't my fault, the switch got turned on. It was some stupid officer that ordered this thing turned on. And it started giving me some weird vibes, So I started countering their vibes back. I said, why aren't you turning the American public that we're being invaded or something's going on here with extraterrestrials, not on a small level, but that would call a major invasion. It's almost every night when they come down to fly over Mexico. I said, well, it's none of your business. You have a need to know. And I said, well, I'm a taxpayer like everybody else. Half my pay is taxes from the goddamn military. I said, I have a mission to know what's going on here. And they said, they just got real. Well, I got just an argument with them. One day they made me go out and paint rocks. I had to go out and paint rocks. Along wet and paint rocks white coming up the driveway. Here I am, this scientist, and I make me paint rocks because I had too many questions. And they hated me because I was a motorcyclist. They said, get rid of this motorcycle. And I wouldn't do it. I said, I have a freedom to ride a motorcycle. You can't tell me. I can't afford a damn car anyway. He said, well, you're going to get in an accident with this thing. And it's going to cost the airport. They already spent $1 million on your education. They're always telling me to spend $1 million on your education. I mean, I hear that every day. I mean, you don't have any idea the kind of pressure they put on me. All they did do was pull a gun on me sometimes. I think they wanted to. And I wasn't very friendly when I didn't get the information that I wanted. But I wanted to know more about the project that I was working on. So finally, I got fed up with them, I'd been in about 2.5 years, and I said, look, I don't want to be in the Air Force anymore. Bullshit. You changed my name. You've done all this weird shit to me. I don't know why you even have me here. I don't like you here. I want to do something else. And you won't tell me what's going on. You're lying to the public. And I said, well, that's your problem. I said, I'm getting out tonight. Okay? I said, I'm getting out right now. And you're going to let me out. But they said, we can't. We won't. And I said, you will. And I stormed out of this. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I stormed out of this office, the senior tech sergeant office, the room leader at night. I stormed out of his office, mad as hell. I said, I'm getting out. I totally had it. I already moved off the base. I couldn't stand to live on the base anymore because there was all this, these guys, were 150, 200 people, scientists, military working together, civilians. We're up here at the site. And, they're having, they're swapping wives, we have this NCO club, they're having brawls, and the morality was terrible. I mean, I've never seen such a sick operation in my life anyway. That was bad. So, I told the guy, I said, I'm getting out tonight, you're letting me out. No, you're not. You got your fire mob, I heard the $1 million rap about how much money they spent on me. They were mad at me because I was running a motorcycle, they had out of control, and they were long chasing me all the time, giving me tickets for doing nothing, I was pissed. So I says, I'm getting out. So I went outside, and I says, how am I going to, I'm going to get my clothes and follow it through. I'm so damn mad. So I went out, and I said, these guys, this military is based on fear. The whole military is based on fear, and basically they're afraid to die. Okay, that's what I figured. So I'm going to play that one up. So I went and I'm going to make them responsible for me dying. That's what I'm going to play up. So I went and got me a, we had these little 2 gallon pouring cans, and push it down and it opens up, and has carbon tetrachloride in it. We use it to clean high voltage for our radar. I said, this is very toxic, it's like glue over there. It didn't bother me, I worked on that stuff all the time, you know. So I went up and went and got a can of that and two big red rags, like the shop rags that mechanics have. I poured this carbon tetrachloride on this rag. And I did that as I walked into this sergeant's office. I got up on his desk. I physically stood up on his desk, poured this stuff all over these rags, bent over and says, I'm getting out right, not only am I getting out tonight, I'm getting out right now and you're going to watch me leave. That's exactly what I told him. I bent myself like this, poured all the stuff out and started breathing, just fire breathing into this carbon tetrachloride, like I was going to kill myself. The guy freaked out. He went nuclear. Okay? He pushed me off the desk, pulled the stuff away from me, pushed the button, had face security, two air police came in, arrested me right on the spot for trying to commit suicide. And 15 minutes later, I was in a van on my way down to Hamilton Air Force Base. For trying to kill me, I was having a blast. They're believing this shit, you know. I was out of there. I did it in 15 minutes. I was out. They didn't even waste time with me. They had me out of there. They got me down to Hamilton Air Force Base. They locked me up to Letterman Air Force Base. Hamilton's the base down at Santa Rosa, and Point Arenas north. They took me over to Letterman Air Force, Letterman Army General Hospital, which has a big insane asylum. They put me in this giant room about this size, great big heavy doors with all these crazy people. And they stuck me there for the night. And they had some guy watching in there so I wouldn't try to put nothing in there and kill myself, right? Next morning, they come in, and the orderly comes in, wakes me up, you know, has me get dressed. This is the doctor. So I go out the door, and this great big giant walls that thing like my recording studio room with the doctor.
Well, I'm going to end that. That was a, I guess both sides of that tape were the same. Didn't realize I'm going to, that was your one and only shot about hearing me get out of the Air Force, because I don't think it's on any other tapes, which I got an honorable discharge, and actually they wanted me to go back, but the Army wanted me, but it was an interesting story there. So anyhow, we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a great rest of the evening. Oh, by the way, Art Bell will be on the next Saturday night. He's back up from the Philippines, and he'll be on his show 10 o'clock Saturday night on Coast to Coast. Bye.